we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Braintree and Witham Times, read by Zeb Soans.
Tony Price has taken over as head chef at the Horse and Groom in Braintree. Our steak and ale pie has gone down the best so far, said Mr. Price. All our regulars are getting wind of it.
Our thanks to Martin Fee for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Susan Calman and journalist and broadcaster Peter Curran. And opposite them on my left, Lloyd Langford and Zoe Lyons. Susan, who's had a little leak?
Yes, it's a story about the Labour Party. And I don't know, Miles, I'm beginning to think some people in the Labour Party aren't fully behind their leader. And yes, their manifesto was leaked, sparking internal ructions in the party. Yes, the right-wing press have been baying for blood. Yes, a lot of the policies don't apply to the whole of the UK due to devolution. Yes, it seems like it'll cost a fortune and no one's priced. And yes, they ran over the foot of a cameraman. But I'm going to be rather controversial, I think, on a Radio 4 programme just now and say, let's just pause for a second about the Labour Party. And I should point out at this point that the manifesto we're talking about isn't an actual manifesto. It's not been confirmed. It's like when I go to the supermarket and write a list saying brown rice, asparagus and chia seeds, and I end up buying Kit Kats and gin. It's very much... Some of the policies contained in that manifesto might actually be quite a good idea, if anyone kind of remembers what policies and manifestos are. And I mean, it's been fun seeing the press tying themselves up in knots, trying to prove that giving free parking to hospital visitors will actually end up killing orphans and turning everyone into Lenin. It's been a laugh. And the funniest thing for me in the whole thing were the headlines in the newspapers saying, Labour are trying to drag us back to the 1970s. Remember that time when people had girl and boy jobs? And I'm suggesting that maybe we give the Labour Party a chance for once.
Gosh, well, that is basically basically communism. So who do you think leaked it, then? I mean, do you think it's necessarily a bad thing?
I have a theory, actually.
Oh, right.
Talk us through it, Lloyd.
I think they gave the date that it was supposed to come out to Diane Abbott.
She's like your friend at the party where you say, don't tell anyone. But
she's a bit sort of send all, isn't
yes.
she? She's
kind
of... Ooh, Diane, I don't know if you had a chance to check the CC column before you press send, but this is not
going the... on about us going back to the 70s like it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I really suit corduroy. I'm not averse to an old avocado bathroom suite. Mm. I could see them come back. And the 70s, remember when young couples in their 20s could actually afford to buy their homes they were living in? That doesn't seem like a bad thing to me, I'm afraid.
But wasn't it strange, though, that the Telegraph and the Mail were screaming, he's going to take us back to the 1970s? Like, that would put Telegraph and Mail readers off.
That sounds very reassuring.
I mean, as far as the sort of nationalisation of the rail service goes, I live in Brighton, so I've been a Southern Rail survivor for the last year. So I'm all for that. I'll look after the rail service, and I'm pretty incompetent at most things, but I reckon I could do a better job.
I'm not sure that would definitely count as renationalisation. I'm not slagging you off. That's essentially like good money after bad.
I
mean, that's
I think part of the problem is as well that on the surface it seems like a really sensible manifesto, but Corbyn is such a divisive figure that it puts people off. It's like if Darth Vader offered you a trifle.
No, you see, the thing is, I would still take that trifle.
Now, what else would he like to renationalise, or would they like to renationalise?
Power. Stuff.
Energy, that is, not sort of democracy and stuff like that.
Energy, the Royal Mail wants to lower the voting age to 16.
That's a good one, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I Googled it earlier on, right? And did you know, at 16,
yes,
you cannot vote, but you can legally sell scrap metal.
Right.
And that can't be right. I mean, what sort of a country?
Some of the 16 and 17-year-olds I've met, I don't really think that they really should be voting.
Yeah, but I think the same about pensioners.
Yeah.
That's Do you true. Know who listens to this?
I do. I also think with the energy thing, it's not total renationalisation, is it? That in each area there would be a sort of publicly owned energy provider, and I think that does seem sensible. Thing. I currently pay a French publicly owned company for my gas supply. Well, I don't. I mean, the neighbours do. I pay for some, a length of piping and a pack. Saw on a roll of insulator tape. What other policies did Labour have?
They said they would renew Trident, but they wouldn't use it. Which could be a very clever double bluff.
So that they only, I suppose that's good because it'll keep the unions on side, people will still be employed. It just needs to be not armed, doesn't it, Trident? I mean, it's just a sort of
cardboard cutout of one kept somewhere to wheel out every now and
again. Like they do with those policemen in shops, and they sometimes give me a right fright.
Yes.
There's one in Boots down the road from here, and honestly, I wasn't shoplifting, and...
Yeah, but any other day of the week you could have been. If I was a shoplifter and I saw a cardboard cutout of a policeman, I think I could nick that. Originally, this is the thrilling leak of the Labour Party's eagerly awaited manifesto, providing plenty of advanced spoilers about their plans and giving away the election's exciting plot twist, which is that the Labour Party dies at the end. The leaked manifesto said that any PM should be cautious about using nuclear weapons, as well as announcing a £250 million child health fund and pledging to end loneliness for the elderly. And I think I speak for all of us when I say, you Marxist scum. As well as planned renationalisation of the rail, mail and energy reform, the Labour Party looked to build at least 100,000 houses a year, delighting everyone from foreign property investors to buy-to-let landlords. The Conservatives are yet to release their manifesto, presumably because it takes a long time to get hold of the UKIP one and tip-X out all instances of the phrase. You've gone early. And tip-X out all instances of the phrase hung, drawn and quartered. 2 points to Susan. Peter, who is at one with the electorate?
Oh, this must be our beloved leader, Prime Minister Theresa May. The Prime Minister and her husband fearlessly submitted themselves to a merciless grilling on the one-show couch. Now, this one-show appearance could have been titled by Conservative Central Office as Intimations of Ordinariness. But it struck me as a bit more like in The Simpsons when Mr. Burns and Smithers use public access TV to try and show that they've got some humanity. It did make me miss Dennis Thatcher, though, seeing them there, you know. Yes, I put the gins out.
I found it, and I have to say, an extraordinary watch. And I've seen the first 8 minutes, and then I just had to stop. I mean, just offensive levels of inanity. But at the same time, an excellent use of the licence fee.
The more natural she tried to look, the more you could just sort of see wires popping out of her neck. Boy jobs, girl jobs, boy jobs, girl jobs. You know, we like to eat it at our dinner table, which we bought because of its strength and stability.
It was a truly, that part of the interview where they were talking about girl jobs and boy jobs was one of the most horrific things I have ever seen in my life. I think that was not a positive part to try and say that in 2017 there are still things like girl jobs and boy jobs. I think there's only one job a boy can do that a girl can't, and even then I have a turkey baster.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It was quite strange, the way they related to each other. It's almost like they'd found a book that was slightly out of date of human behaviour and customs, and had frankly learned it off backstage, then gave a good account of themselves for people from another planet.
It was like...
There's just always the feeling that, like, something's not quite right. Like, when she was eating the chips with the coffee...
I wasn't surprised when she came out in complete favour of fox hunting. I went, yeah, you can.
I just don't know if it's a bet to see what the most extreme thing that Theresa May can bring back is. You know, I don't know whether the next policy announcement will be to bring back, I don't know, the black and white minstrel show and rickets.
It's that curious combination of her saying, it's like she's trying to please everyone, so she's like, oh, we're going to cap energy bills, but we're going to bring back fox hunting. It's like, oh, we're going to... reintroduce the death penalty, but there should be more recycling.
What a legacy for poor Ed Miliband. You know, David Cameron took much from Blair, and poor Ed just gets his energy policy stolen by Theresa May.
Yeah. Well, Labour also have plans to copy Ed Miliband by losing the general election. touch life. I found, honestly, watching Matt Baker, he's like quite a friendly, up guy, isn't he? But even he struggled to look... even vaguely interested. I mean, if you think of it, and I mean this as a fan, the sort of detritus he must have had to sit through on that show and sort of nod along enthusiastically. And even he, after some of the answers that Mays gave...
Yeah, I was on it last week, Miles.
You were on it last week, were you?
I was on it last week with Orlando Bloom.
Oh, really?
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know you two were an item.
Yeah. It was very much the same sexual chemistry as Theresa May and her husband.
Perspicaciously, this is another week in the life of Theresa May, who, amongst other things, found time to appear alongside her husband on The One Show, where nothing of any interest whatsoever happened, maintaining a proud 11-year history. The Prime Minister's appearance prompted the almost inconceivable scenario of One Show viewers pining for the arrival of a Giles Brandreth report on the correct way to layer a scone. Theresa May also revealed this week that she favours the return of fox hunting. The news was met with dismay from animal rights activists, but provided much-needed hope for the UK's declining bugle industry. Feast after a long famine. Also this week, it was announced that the CPS will make no charges over Conservative Party overspending. The CPS investigation related to the funding of the Conservative Party battle bus during the last election. The battle bus dispatched additional campaigners to marginal seats, spilling out young Conservatives on the unsuspecting local population, like a sort of Bell End Trojan horse. To Peter. Lloyd, who no longer spies for the FBI?
This is the story that President Donald Trump has recently fired FBI Director James Comey. He's only the second FBI director in history to be fired. The first was a gentleman named William Sessions, who was fired by Bill Clinton. And amongst other things, one of the things Sessions did was bill the FBI for a $10,000 fence that he installed around his home. So if Trump is looking for a replacement, then I feel they see eye to eye in regards to ridiculous walls. The people he's fired so far include Sally Yates, Mike Flynn and Angela Reid, who I thought were the cast of Coronation Street. Vladimir Putin's immediate reaction was to say that he wasn't involved, which, if my experience of playground farting has taught me anything, indicates that he definitely was. He who denied it supplied it. Uh, He actually said that he fired him because of his mishandling of the Hillary Clinton email debacle. Trump hasn't been this angry at an email since that Nigerian prince refused to get back to him. Or since he bought those special tablets online and they didn't add 3 extra inches. He still has very small hands.
But you know, I made a series for Radio 4 that just went out recently, and I was over in the States. And one of the things when you got below the political class and spoke to people was that to us, Trump might be a ridiculous figure, but his self-delusion and self-obsession is the sort of thing ordinary Americans can really relate to. In all seriousness, that power and the fact that he's managed to get where he is a beacon for millions.
How did Comey discover about his sacking?
He was delivering a talk to FBI members in Los Angeles, and there was a television on in the background, and he saw it as a newsflash going across the bottom, and apparently laughed and went, "Hey, somebody's having a practical joke here, guys." And then realised it was true, and then the letter followed. You think that is... I mean, there's being dumped by text, but seeing it on a national news network...
Why was he fired, really, does anyone think?
The timing is crucial because they had the Sally Yates hearings about her resigning, being fired as the Attorney General, and she gave some very damning testimony about what the Trump administration knew about the Russian interference. And, I mean, Comey was praised for his handling of the Clinton emails by Trump because it essentially was part of what won him the presidency. But apparently Comey asked for extra money to investigate further the links in the campaign. And so the timing is suspicious because the President of the United States, when he finds out that the director of the FBI is investigating him about his links with Russia, just fires him. Just an extraordinary thing.
You don't think it's just a series of unfortunate coincidences? Bodaciously, these are the latest happenings in that screaming Edvard Munch painting made constitutional flesh that is the Trump administration. This week, FBI Director James Comey was fired by Donald Trump, who claimed that Comey had lost the public's trust over the Clinton email investigation. The sacking has been compared to President Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre, an event which, with a few format tweaks, became the model for Anton Deck's, to some extent, more successful takeaway. Shortly after firing Comey, Trump met with Russian Ambassador Sergei Lavrov, which is comforting news. About as comforting as discovering Vladimir Putin's run you a bubble bath and told you not to worry about the strange smell. Some say all this could result in a constitutional crisis for the US, but the ongoing existence of Donald Trump is basically like the ongoing existence of BBC Radio 4's Saturday Live. If the public is willing for these atrocities to continue, there's very little rational people can do to prevent the suffering. 2 points to Lloyd. And at the end of round one, the all-important scores are Susan and Peter have 4, and so too do Lloyd and Zoe. We start round two with a sign spotted above the sinks in a workplace bathroom.
These sinks are for washing your hands only. Please do not use them to clean your lunch boxes.
Our thanks to Ross Fleming for sending us that. Zoe, qui est le nouveau président?
This is French presidential elections that were won by Emmanuel Macron, or Macaroon, as I called him for the first few weeks. I thought, how French is that? He's even named after a pastry. That's amazing. It's Emmanuel Macron who's kicked Marine Le Pen into touch for the time being. So he's become the youngest president in French history at the age of 39. Immediately making everybody of the age of 39 or older feel incredibly inadequate as a human being if you're not running your own country. He set up the party, his own party, last April, en marche. So he's gone from setting up his own party to being president of France within a 12-month period. It's an incredible turnaround. He is a doer. I mean, I said I was going to repaint my kitchen about the same time, I say, and it's still not been done. It opens up a load of questions as well, re-Brexit, because he's very pro-Europe. He loves it. He loves it so much, he lives there. And... you know, we've had the French elections now, the Dutch elections, the Austrian elections at the end of last year, and all of them have gone pro-Europe and anti-nationalist. And it's kind of left Britain there in the cold, where we're sort of like, guys, I thought we were all going to leave. You said you were going to leave. I thought, now I look like an arse.
I think it's amazing that he won, given that the same group of hackers that were involved... in destabilising the Clinton campaign in the States were involved in releasing his campaign's entire stock of emails, five mailboxes stolen when all campaigning was supposed to have stopped.
They seem to be enjoying it. It's like a hobby, the Russians.
I bet they win Eurovision this year, even though they're not even in it.
Yeah. I think they'll let us back in Eurovision, even if we're not in Europe and we've told them all to bugger off.
Well, they let Australia in.
Yeah. Yeah, but people like Australia.
I still think it's impressive, though, because at the moment there's 577 constituencies in France and he's only got 450 candidates. But if there's anyone I'm going to trust to be able to sweet-talk people into standing, it's a guy that convinced his drama teacher to leave her husband and her kids for him.
Sorry, am I the only person here willing to say that I really fancied a lot of my teachers and I would have quite liked this to have been my life?
Yes, but...
fancied lots of my teachers.
If you had entered into a relationship with one of your teachers,
yes,
they would now be in jail rather than be the Prime Minister.
Well, Sir Patrick Lee, this is the result of the French presidential election, where the centrist Emmanuel Macron saw off the far-right candidate Marine Le Pen. Macron now faces parliamentary elections with his party République en Marche, which, if my schoolboy French hasn't let me down, translates as People of the Swamp. The election of Macron could upset Brexit negotiations, given that he has previously described Brexit as a crime. Although, if we can argue we committed it as a crime of passion, then under French law, we can get off scot-free. Macron's victory followed an exhausting campaign, where at least he was never forced to sit on a pastel-coloured sofa and be asked, Monsieur Macron, est-ce que le travail pour les garçons et que le travail pour les filles? By a Monsieur Mathieu Boulanger. Two points to Zoe. Susan, have a listen to this. Welcome back, everybody. Susan, who says we should all stop bottling it?
This starts off as a story essentially about recycling, but actually turns into a story of the psyche of the British nation and how strange and lacking in confidence we are at very basic tasks in life. There was a survey done basically to help get rid of plastic bottles. It's what it is. There's so many plastic bottles in the world. Eventually, there'll be so many plastic bottles, no one will be able to move. I'm paraphrasing. And what they're trying to encourage people to do is to get water from cafes and restaurants. So they're trying to get a law passed whereby cafes and restaurants have to give you water if you ask for it. To me, the interesting part of the whole survey was less about that. We all agree, recycling, fine, get rid of plastic, fine. Is that 71% of people don't have the confidence to walk into a premises and ask for a glass of... What hope do we have in the Brexit negotiations? When people can't go into a shop and ask for to refill, even a glass of water, can you Can you refill up my bottle, please? Oh, no, no, please take our rights and liberties and all our money. It's a... it's an extraordinary thing. Absolutely, you know, I would feel embarrassed. This is what I'm being honest. You know, if I was walking down the street in London and I run out of water and I go into a cafe or restaurant and I say, can you fill my bottle? I wouldn't do that. In the same way as I don't like using facilities in a toilet capacity.
Oh, I have no problem doing that.
Do you just walk in?
Yeah. You've got to do it with confidence. Just, yeah, just don't get any eye contact. Like, they know why you're there. You know why you're there. Then you sort of pass on the guilt that they can't ask you what you're there for. Cause they, and you just eyeball it straight to the loo.
It's especially counterproductive if you go into a pub and they're like, oh, you can only use the toilet if you're a customer.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm trying to get rid of fluids rather than take them on.
Do not do the, when you walk into a pub, don't bother asking. Lloyd, just kind of put that sort of distant stare on, smile as if you've recognised someone vaguely in the location of the toilet, and just head off waving.
I think that looks far more suspicious. If I walk towards the toilet smiling and waving.
Just on my way to meet a friend.
As you know, I'm quite obsessed by toilets. I keep...
keep one with you at all times.
No. I have an Excel spreadsheet...
Yeah, of course it's Christmas in my suitcase. It's a big old chemical toilet, Susan.
I have an Excel spreadsheet of toilets I've been to.
That's also very useful if there's no paper in the toilet.
Which ones are the good ones, and then when you go back, you know which ones to go to, because there's some aren't good and some are really exceptional.
Oh yeah, sort of like
that's a hell of an itinerary to plan.
Yes.
You should go online. You should have a sort of lavatory trip advisor. Well, marvellous reviews this place. Apparently it's incredibly comfortable. It's got aloe vera quilted toilet paper. It's got absolutely...
The thing is, I've got a really, really, I'll be really honest with you, I've got a really sensitive gag reflex, right? It's not why I'm a lesbian, but it helps. And
I have as well, and I found out when I was waving as I was walking towards a toilet.
So, plastic bottles, that's what this is all about. Does anybody have anything to say, relatively concise, that would be suitable for the final edit of this programme that is about plastic bottles? Not necessarily about using public lavatories.
Denigrate. The point was that we all agree that we should have less plastic bottles. I'm suggesting that the British public don't have the confidence, even if it was passed by law, to do this. So I think you'll find, Miles, that my point was related very deeply to... I mean, we got a bit off topic with the spreadsheet, but initially it was very much on topic. I mean, all of this made perfect sense.
Oh, I can see how we got where we got, Susan.
I think plastic bottles and the proliferation of them makes life slightly trickier, because like when I was a kid I could put a message in a bottle and throw it in the sea and hope that it would like travel anywhere in the world, whereas now if you do it, there's so many bottles it's likely to like choke a whale to death, and then when they do the autopsy they find the name and address of the killer.
Paternally, this is the news that Keep Britain Tidy are encouraging us to buy fewer plastic bottles of water in order to reduce waste. Britons use 7 million plastic bottles a year, and tragically less than half of these are used for their intended purpose of being filled with urine and then flung out of the cab of a moving lorry at a dogger. You see, on topic, Susan. The sea is apparently increasingly full of plastic bottles, but what's wrong with that? It does at least raise the tantalising prospect that we will one day be able to walk to France across an Evian causeway. Pubs, restaurants and theatres are legally obliged to provide free tap water on request, and there are plenty more things like this that we don't know about. For example, it's your legal right to go into Curry's and demand a kiss from the manager. Do tell them I sent you. The last time I asked for water at my local cafe, they were decidedly sniffy about it. Not only did they refuse, they also asked me to take my foot spa off the counter. Anyway, you have to be ready to make the most of every opportunity for free water, which is why I, for one, always take a straw to a baptism. 2 points to Susan. Lloyd, who won't bend to parish pressure?
Oh, this is St. David's Church in Blaenporth, Ceredigion. They have decided to ban yoga from the church community centre because they say it is non-Christian. So the church... church says yoga is out, but Pilates is OK, which confused me because I thought it was Pontius Pilates. ordered the crucifixion of our Lord. And I'm not really sure at all about CrossFit. So there is a parochial church council, which sounds like something from Father Ted, and the spokesman said it is felt that activities that might be seen to be in conflict with Christian values and belief would not be appropriate. It's ridiculous.
I mean,
it's
like Tai Chi, Taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
Or cash prize bingo.
It's like if a Muslim community centre forbid people from stretching their hamstrings.
Do you think this is reasonable behaviour, Zoe?
No, not really. I mean, nobody really goes... I mean, well, it's just a bit of bending, isn't it? I mean, I've attempted yoga and enlightenment wasn't on my mind. In fact, when we were lying there and she went, just lie there and try and find peace of mind. And I thought she said pizza mind. And then all I could think of for half an hour was pizza. So it wasn't really a religious experience, more gastronomic for me. But
my wife goes to yoga and she says the most kind of profound statement at the start is, please don't be embarrassed if you break wind during some of the moves.
Break wind, that break is... bread, what's the difference?
That is beautiful.
It is, it is.
That is beautiful.
And Lloyd, I don't suppose this church allows champing, do they?
What, that's a mashed potato.
I've stepped out from racial stereotypes because I realised...
Sadly, the real Peter Curran.
Yeah, exactly. I realised, looking at the Church Conservation Trust website, that champing is the new big thing. It means that you can camp inside a church.
Oh, no.
How do you get the tent pegs in?
Yeah.
Metonymically, this is the news that a church in Wales has banned yoga from its premises on the grounds that it is unchristian, although you get to exercise in the course of Christianity. Anyway, if you think about the number of times you stand up, sit and kneel down in the course of an average Eucharist, it's basically Zumba set to organ music. Christianity has been known to change its mind about what's acceptable and what isn't. You never know, this whole thing could end up being foreskins all over again. Anyway, they're much more laissez-faire at my local church. They allow yoga, bingo, even the weekly sacrificing of virgins to appease the goat god Pan. Basically, anything goes as long as you remember to mop up after yourself. 2 points to Lloyd. Zoe, have a listen to this.
Lots of Radio 4 listeners have just died.
Zoe, where have there been some shifting sands?
This is on a beach called Dua Beach on the west coast of Ireland. And 33 years ago, there was a massive storm and it took all their sand away. And it's come back. It's a miracle. It's been reported all over the place. It's been in the States, Saudi Arabia. They know a good sand story when they hear one. So they were straight on this. And the sand seems to have come back en masse, like not one at a time, which I think would have been less dramatic and taken a considerable amount of time. It's come back en masse, which proves that even sand has grasped the idea that you can do things better together. And... It's resulted in a huge influx of tourists there to see the returning sands. They've been turning up in their tens.
I think it's much more popular than 10 a year, Zoe, and it's now been renamed the Wild Atlantic Way, or as it was known when I was a kid, the terrifyingly gusty, cold, rain-lashed stay-in-your-car way.
One of the first things I learned as a child was to put up a windbreak. It's one of the first things you're taught if you holiday in Scotland is to efficiently put a windbreak up to prevent the Force 10 gale from spoiling what is otherwise a very happy family holiday. And then you paddle in the North Sea, and if you don't smile for the photographs, then you're ungrateful.
You can lose a lot of your dermis as well, can't you, in a sort of windy, sandy beach in Scotland or Ireland. You can just literally lose inches of skin from yourself. It's a very brutal exfoliation. It really is.
It does sound like also the sort of thing, when the beach disappeared, it was the sand that disappeared, not the land underneath it. Mm. It does sound like the sort of thing that you could just go down to sort of Travis Perkins and buy a lot of sand, and in the night just empty it out, and there you go, oh, look who's back.
You could do it in a sort of Great Escape style and just let a bit up your trousers.
That's why it's taken them 30 years. I think it's lovely. It sounds like a fairy tale. I think it's a beautiful story.
It's a great story, because you just think about it, like, sex on the beach now is going to be a lot easier. No, because, you know, 6 months ago you misjudged the gradient and you end up mingling with a shingle.
Get your rocks off would mean something totally different.
Botanically, this is the news that a beach in Ireland has suddenly reappeared after it vanished in a storm in 1984. Of course, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, meaning the coast of Cannes is now a barren wasteland strewn with empty bottles and corpses. The beach returned after 33 years, along with the sea anemone, with a twinkle in its eye and many a tale to tell. The local cocktail bar has adjusted its menu to now serve sex on the beach, as opposed to the previous local favourite, sex on a pile of mud and rocks. 2 points to Zoe. Peter, who got airline passengers in a flap?
Oh, this was a story this week. The British Airways had a flight that was due to take off from Heathrow for the US, and it had to be cancelled when a bird was found flapping around inside the cockpit. The efforts to remove the blackbird over several hours culminated in airport ground staff using a recording of birds in distress in an attempt to scare it away. The BA spokesman said, "When it comes to flying, we're the experts, so it's not surprising this bird wanted to hitch a ride on one of our 12 daily flights to New York."
The thing I enjoy most about this story is playing the sound of birds in distress. I think that's a...
It was a recording of agitated bird song called Starlings in Distress, which British Airways describe as just one of a hand-picked range of in-flight entertainment.
Blackbird on a plane does sound like a terrible remake of Snakes on a Plane, though, doesn't it? Low budget, low horror.
Get these ruddy blackbirds off my ruddy plane. Yeah.
Just Samuel L. Jackson for 90 minutes with some trill.
we had a bird flew into our flat, and we were three stories. They got in, and we had to try and catch it whilst restraining five cats. I fashioned a net to try and get it out of the flat.
What, like a sort of Satsuma bag?
It was a plastic bag on a mop.
It sounds like the end of the Crystal Maze.
Well done, you've collected six starlings. Crepuscularly, this is the news that a BA flight from Heathrow to Newark was grounded after a blackbird flew into the face of a pilot and could then not be removed from the cockpit. Passengers suspected that the bird would cause trouble when they spotted it downing its eighth pint of Boddington's in the departure lounge, having consumed nothing but an Egg McMuffin to soak up the poison. The real tragedy of the story is the family waiting for him in arrivals at the other end. Their little beaks still open expectantly, waiting for the sliding doors to open and reveal a blackbird carrying a giant Toblerone. And, of course, through all this drama, the alligator in the overhead locker slept on undisturbed. 2 points to Peter. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Susan.
This was spotted in the Daily Telegraph by Margaret Denslow. Photographs of Ed Miliband helping a constituent cut her grass during the local election campaign were staged, an angry voter has claimed. Images showed Mr Miliband pushing the lawnmower, but the woman he assisted claims she had to help him start the machine and that she had originally believed that he was a Jehovah's Witness.
Peter.
Brilliant. This is a nice one from Jessamine Braithwaite, who sent, saw this typo in the Daily Mail after the French election results were announced. Projections showed Le Pen took 34.5% of the vote, while a record-breaking 4.2 million voters soiled their ballot.
Lloyd.
Steve Rees in Didcot saw this product review on petplanet.co.uk. It's for a ramp to help dogs get into the back of cars. Great ramp, excellent value and build quality. Only problem is that it's a little bit steep for the dog to get up, so I had to cut 2 inches off the legs.
Zoe.
This was seen on an East Devon Airbnb listing by a listener called T. McKenney, and it says, the gardens and orchard are there for your enjoyment, as are our friendly sheep.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Lloyd and Zoe have 8, but this week's winners are Susan and Peter with 9. Oh. Before we leave you, here's an advert in a magazine called Chichester Wellbeing, sent in by Michael Reynolds.
The Well Balanced programme helps Chichester residents aged 65 and over to reduce their risk of falling. The 16-week course is aimed at people who feel unsteady on their feet. It is a rolling programme, so you can join at any time.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Susan Carman, Peter Curran, Lloyd Langford and Zoe Lyons. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, James Kettle and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Stuart Mitchell and Jenny Laville. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.